Welcome. Welcome, my friends. Thank you for joining me on Evolving with Corey Castle. I'm Corey Castle, and I'm joined today by Steve Morrison. Steve,
hey, Corey. How are you, man?
Yeah, good, man. So I'm not, and this might be something you're kind of used to. I'm not somebody who does like interviews, really. I'm just somebody who kind of like chats with people and like really kind of, for the most part, I really want to make you feel welcome and free and really just open to kind of like use this platform in any way that you feel like maybe you wouldn't have otherwise had this
latitude,
limited reach, but you get a reach. It's very limited. but I want to thank you before anything. And it's something I constantly say all the time, like any stream that I'm ever doing, any video I'm ever doing, any wrestling match that I'm ever doing, any comedy show that I'm ever doing, I always want to take the time to thank you for the currency of your effort, because effort and attention mean more now. They have more value than money in currency.
Right.
So
right.
The fact that, like, everything is competing for your attention. The scratch to every itch instantly.
Like, right.
The slow builds don't really happen that much anymore for much of anything.
No, we've talked about this, the Preston and Steve show, and we've talked about this. Listen, we for 5 hours a day, Monday through Friday, we get to, you know, talk and address things that are important to us. We also, you know, endeavor to respect the audience and respect different points of view, but we tend to forget there's a substantial commonality. We're constantly told to war against each other, and we're constantly told to break off into sub-factions. Peter Gabriel has a couple of great songs, you know, that talk about that. But what we find is, you know, you go out to any one of our events or any of the charity events or the Camp Out for Hunger, and there's just, in general, people all kind of want the same things. They want to let, you know, if you're a good person, they want the best for everyone, especially themselves, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. But in this world where there is, as you said, this constant influx of stimulation and all this stuff, and you got to discern, we've talked countless times on air about how, as stupid as that old song, Stop and Smell the Roses, one of my favorite songs is the Rush song, Time Stand Still. It's just an awesome song, and the message is awesome. It's just, but you know, sometimes people approach things like that, you know, the notion of, you know, self-evaluation. And you know, obviously, Corey, you're a guy who, you know, who you're aware of yourself, and you know what makes you tick and what you want to become. And I think when we start getting into stuff like that, sometimes people might bristle and go, that's a little too, you know, that's one end of the bookshelf in a bookstore with some, you know, authors I've never read about self-realization and all that. But the truth of the matter is that it's important to do that. It's important to understand your value, to not overestimate your value, and to appreciate life. Because the old line is, if you wake up, if your eyes open up in the morning, you've won. So, you know, there you go. So I hope
there's a constant need to be distracted from conversations that are maybe bigger or like they've got a bigger scope on things than you're willing to accept for the day, because you're like, oh, I'm just trying to get through my workday. I'm just trying to get through this month. I got to pay this month's bills, and I'm not worried too much about. And so it's a whole lot of blinders.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of opportunities to plug yourself into things. There are a lot of people who do superficial, surface sort of things, and they think, okay, I'm this is how I'm going to take care of this. I admire the people that are the roll up your sleeves, get things done kind of people. I haven't always been. I try to be, and I try to pay attention to the things that are around me that I can, you know, that I can at least maybe help be better. You know, the charity efforts that we do through the station, obviously we have a big mechanism behind it, but in my own personal life with my wife, we do a whole, you know, other things. What it really comes down to is, you know, you're talking about being distracted, and obviously you talk about evolving. That is a big thing. I had an epiphany, or at least as you live, you go through different chapters of your life. And just recently, I had to remind myself to get outside of my own head, to stop. In other words, I talked with Preston about this. I'd see a date on the calendar for something that was coming up, or an event, or something we had to do. And all the days towards that point on the calendar were living in service of that one date at the expense of every second I was living to get to that date. Do you know what I mean, Corey?
Yeah, yeah. It's like you're so focused on that goal, you forget about the immediate goals leading up to it.
Exactly. So I'm missing the moment to enjoy this cup of coffee. I'm missing the moment to all these things that get dealt out to you that are there for the taking. And, you know, without sounding new agey, a cup of coffee outside or in the sun or whatever, all those moments are there. And I would be summarily just dismissing them as I'm getting to this other thing. And I've learned just to get out of my head. Literally, they all sound like bad Hallmark cards, but they're true. Seize the moment, live in the moment. What's going to happen is going to happen. Obviously, you can exert influence on that, but there are some things that are out of your control. A lot of, my brother's, recovering, did the AA system, and it's worked, not like it's Nutrisystem, but, went through AA and had a great result, had a tremendous result. But that's sort of the thing. You can worry about what you can change and don't worry about what you can't. It's going to happen anyway. So,
My mom talks about the serenity prayer like every single day. So there's not a moment where that doesn't pop into my head when something comes along that I know that I don't have the power to change it, but I want to accept it. So I do tons of forgiving without ever being asked, because it's like, I'm doing that for me more than I'm doing it for you, because like, I don't even have to tell you I forgive you for the most part. If somebody does anything that I think is like, a little cringy, yucky to me, I'll just be like, all right, you got to be you so that I can be me and I love me. So let me just motor on.
We were just talking about that. We had a therapist in on the show, and obviously we do a ton of, our job, our thing is to do a show that gets people up and going to work and gives them, you're hanging out with friends. We consider every single listener a friend, and we're all in a big car, and we're hanging out together, and we want to be that space where you can come and hang out with your friends. But we also will hit topics that we think really resonate, and some of them are a little bit more austere. And in this case, we were talking about, she came from a life of, with addiction and her parents and all the things you do, to get ahead. And then after, they got so many emails from people who are responding and were helped by that gesture. So, learning to forgive yourself was a big part of that conversation, giving yourself the permission to be freaking human, and also to get rid of the narcissism that says, I know, but I should be better than this. I should be better than this. And when, realize you're going through stuff, other people are going through the exact same thing. But it's funny, I've seen people give very salient advice to someone and then turn around and ignore the same advice with themselves that they gave to someone.
It's so much easier to give out advice and not listen to it and take it for yourself.
That's the easiest advice to take. And so you got to get good at giving yourself permission. Like I had a tech thing here, and I'm pulling out wires and I'm doing all this shit, and I'm going, and I had a full blown hyperventilating by myself. I'm such an asshole. Why can't I figure this out moment? I gave myself permission to do it afterwards. I start to feel bad, and I'm like, it happens. It's okay. We do it now and then, you know, and because what happens is you begin that slippery slope and it keeps looping back over. Well, I'm an ass, but I'm not because of this, because I can't do that, because I'm this. And it's just never meant to be. And I see people slide down those, you know, those slopes, and it ends up really impacting them. I think another thing that enters into people's, there's a lot of hubris too. Like, you know, hey, don't think you have everybody figured out, you know, don't, you know, we had the discussion. I talked on air about this guy who I'd encounter. I'd be walking my dog. You know, I walk, you know, every day I'd go out with Chelsea, my dog, she's since, you know, passed, but it was a big Zen thing for me. And I'd pass this guy who really was I thought he was a prick. I'm like, dude, you are the scowliest mother effer I've ever met. And then a comment here that you got to put your dog, you know, over there, or keep my dog or my dog. And I'm like, okay. And I finally just, I just said to him, you know, what the fuck's your problem on the path? And, you know, I kind of look serial killery, and I didn't want to, you know, scare him. But a little bit later on, I found out that at the time all this was going on, his wife was dying of cancer. And I didn't know that, you know, and so, and when, and then subsequently to that whole thing, you know, we started talking, we just had a better moment, and the guy became a good friend. And I arranged with the neighborhood people, a charity, to get his wife some equipment that she needed. She's since passed, but he was a good dude. And I mean, those little reminders in life have to come every now and then so that you don't automatically assume and display the hubris that I got you figured out. I know you, I know what you're about. You don't always, you know,
I've been doing this bit on stage, and forgive me, because I say it to anybody who's listening. If you heard it a million times, this will be the 1,000,001th time you've heard it. Once. That's 1,000,001th. Yes.
Yeah.
That's the word now. Yeah. but I say, not everybody's got it all figured out. The way I look at it, I see it like, look at birds. Birds, they got the entire sky. Some of them still get hit by cars. Not everybody's got it all figured out.
Right, right.
And it really does come down to like considering this source
on
where it's coming from. Like a lot of times, and I understand that like somebody who might not know me, just seeing me on the side of the street, look at this man bun dork. Look at this guy over here. Like this guy thinks he's cool.
Yeah.
Like I have no idea or any business to know what you're thinking about me. But what I'd rather do is I'd rather shatter whatever idea you probably had by just being who I am.
You know what, Corey? I'll say this. You know, I see it. I see people who espouse, you know, togetherness and acceptance and, you know, diversity, and then they're the big, you know, they proselytize that message, and it all sounds good. And then you see them sometimes, and they get snarky with a waiter, or they're the first to like shit all over someone, you know, who's, I mean, a lot of times the people that have done the kindest things for me are the, or been the most compassionate are the people that I think in general, some people might go, you know, that's your guy that, you know, that's your pal, your buddy. You know, and I mean, there's one guy in particular that when I had a prostate cancer diagnosis in 2014, there's a guy who, you know, who reached out to me, who'd gone through it. And I still have fun with him because I love him dearly, but he'll wear, you know, full like velvet coats in the dead of summer. And he's always courting a heat stroke, but he's also really, when a push comes to shove, compassionate guy, and that's what matters. So those throughout my life, like my father always used to say, you know, you'll never know who the really, really wealthy people are, you know, the good people, the people who are, you know, who share the wealth and do that. A lot of times, you know, I would see my dad do it. My dad was an executive at a company called Northern Telecom in Dallas for years. He would go out with, you know, to lunch with the guys in the mailroom and stuff like that. It was never, there was never a presumption of what you were by how you looked or, you know, or quirkiness. And I tend to be drawn to quirkiness. I like the person who's so self-possessed that they're, you know, they whether it be, you know, gauges or however you define or project yourself out there, that's fine. Now, mind you, you don't show up to the funeral of a loved one in a tube top and
I haven't found, you know what? I've been on the lookout. I haven't been able to find a tube top that I like the most.
You're right.
I keep trying them on.
I think you'd look pretty dazzling. Yeah. I think you'd look.
You know what? Now that you said dazzling, I haven't thought of one with sparkles on it. Maybe that's next.
You get a bedazzler. They're actually really cheap. And you can buy one at QVC at 2 o'clock in the morning. So you'll be good. But you know what I'm saying in general. I think to your point, that's, you know, you learn a lot, you know, throughout life. And you try not to repeat those dumb mistakes of presuming, like you, for example. You know, I can see people, you know, they're going to prejudge. But it's okay. You know, you take some time to not that it's the onus is on you to convince them otherwise, but you know, if they're a good person and open to it, they'll see who you are.
Yeah. Sometimes if I'm getting a wrong read from somebody, just like right off the bat, I'm like, okay, I get it. I'm not for you.
Yeah.
I get it.
That's fine.
Not everybody has to be for everybody else.
There's billions of people on the planet, for crying out loud. You're going to find someone.
I learned to practice grace not only with other people but with myself, in the fact that something went on. One of my friends cheated on his girlfriends, and like our whole mutual friends group all kind of turned on him.
Yeah,
and stopped talking to him. And I talked to him, and he was like, "I never promised you I was perfect."
Right.
Like
right.
I'm a flawed human. I this isn't the first time I've messed up, and this isn't going to be the last time I mess up. And I was like, I love you. I love you. I can't with any of my friends. Why would I turn on somebody for making a mistake when I know I've made mistakes? This is why I don't like road rage out on the street, because I'm like, oh yeah. I used to be a bad driver too. you get good eventually. It's evolving.
Yeah, no, it which seems like such a great evolving. I want to evolve into a better. You should always be trying to improve yourself. You should always be listening to people that disagree with you. You should never, you know. And obviously, I'm not talking about the massive extremes. But listen, I've had in my life, I've had my opinions changed by people that I just took the time to listen to. You know, and just in general about life issues. But it turns out, you know, as crazy as it is, my mom and my dad actually had some good wisdom. They'd lived some time. And, you know, my mom passed away when I was 20, turning 21. And, you know, my dad is 95. But you accrue some knowledge, I feel, you know, that those little things will make you enjoy life more. I see so many people now more than ever, for crying out loud, with the horrifying suicide rate and all that stuff, and people dealing with so much. I mean, you know, the discord and all of that, it weighs down on people. But the truth of the matter is that the story's still pretty good out there. This, you know, we can, you're always in the game. As I said before, your eyes open up in the morning. You got a chance. You can do something. You can, and don't deny yourself. You know, I think it all starts with you, Corey. Not specifically you. I don't wake up and go, "How's Corey doing?" But what I do say is,
I mean, I wouldn't mind it if you did.
But it wouldn't bother me. Ultimately, it's look out for yourself. If you're happy, and you make yourself happy, it sounds like a selfish thing to do. It's not. It is a ripple effect. You know, it is, it will go out for, you can't, when someone's tortured and pissed off. Yeah. You know, the guy was really wrecked inside. He was a burned out cinder, but just a great gregarious guy. You know, you never hear that, you know, I mean, it's, if you're cool.
You say, Bill Burr bit. Yeah. He's like, he always paid his bills on time. he gave him a bill. He paid it.
There you go.
He's a bill paying son of a bitch.
Yeah, but there you go. So, you know, and that's you know, not that anyone asked. And I also, as I'm blathering on here, I also know that unless someone asks you, a lot of times there's no need to proffer your opinion. You know, a lot of people really want you to know how they feel about all sorts of things when you're like, you know, not always, you know, you, I mean, what we do on our show for hours is talk about what we feel about things, but in general, you know, everyone's living their own lives, dealing with their own pains, dealing with their own things. And, you know, we'll have to keep that in focus, that it's not all beginning and ending with us.
Something I've been meaning to ask you for some years now, I think. So have you considered or even flirted with the idea of returning to stand-up?
So I did stand-up for about 11, 12 years. I loved it. But the truth of the matter is that to do stand-up, you'd be working the weekends, and I get up at 3:30, you know, every, you know, Monday through Friday. And, the notion has no, attraction to me, mainly because I also get to, I do tons of improv comedy every morning. So I get to joke, you know, and I hit more people in one show that I would have hit in years of stand-up. And I mean, you know, when I was doing colleges and stuff like that, I was doing, you know, 5,000, you know, a couple thousand people, you know. I mean, I was never like a massive marquee name, but I had a good reputation, and I was working through it. I was doing stand-up at the point in time when there was a glut of stand-up comedy. It had gotten discovered. There was a Rodney Dangerfield, Young Comedians on HBO, and then I kid you not, I mean, Ground Rounds and any place that could house a comedy show was doing it. So I was doing, I was working a lot, but there was that point where I got radio, and I went to a school for television. The main focus would have been television and film, and radio was a third. I was like, okay, I'll learn this as well. But, then radio, I was doing stand-up, and I'd been doing stand-up for a while, and radio reared its head, and I'm like, wait a second, I can write this stuff, I can voice it all, I can produce it, you know, I can do it, I can improv live on air if that's the deal. That's turned out to be the main thing that it seems people enjoy, at least for whatever small contribution I make to the show. That it's that they enjoy the comedy thing. So long answer to your short question is that I don't really. And also, I heard Rob Schneider years ago talk about this, and now he's since gone back to stand up because, you know, he had not been doing it for a long time, and he's on SNL. When he had SNL, it's like, he's got a gig, he's not going to take gigs away from other people, you know, and spots and slots. And other words begin with S. And so, you know, that resonated with me as well. I don't want to go up A, rusty, not that I would be that rusty, but B, also it's their comedians who are vying for spots all the time and trying to work their way up, and it wouldn't, you know. I used to hate when somebody who, you know, who'd come in and you know, do an open mic and lock the roster. You're there, you've been waiting around, and someone shows up and wants to work through some material, and you're fucked. You know, that's it. Okay, I got to go now because, you know, the schedule's changed now. So-and-so's walked through the door, and they've got the stage.
Well, like, open mic culture can be kind of crappy, I mean, when it comes to that sort of thing. But in my brain, this is the way I thought of it. So I decided some years ago that I'd step away from wrestling. I was going to step away completely, just because, you know, I was getting older. I never stopped getting older.
Yeah. But,
at the time I was like, you know, I could do less damage to my body and be fine. But then as I stayed away for a little while, I was like, I feel like I have so much to offer as far as like what I can do to help this next generation
right.
of talents, like sharpen their skills as far as like learn how to like get reactions and how to sure. how to tell stories and how to really stand-up comedy and pro wrestling are so identical. So
let me tell you something. That is a fact. We had we've had a number of wrestlers, and I'm trying to figure out which one specifically we were talking about this about, but virtually everyone that comes in, Drew Gulak is a friend of the show. And, every one of them that we've had in from John Cena to the whole roster, all The Miz, all charismatic, all ready to go, almost turnkey entertainer level. I mean, you'd have to be good with, speaking on mic, good with improvisational stuff. It's all part of the skill set. So, yeah, it's no shock that you were interested in stand up. It's part of the deal. I mean, look at Dwayne Johnson. Look at the guy's good. I mean, improvisationally, all that stuff. And when you go out and you're standing in front of, however many people there to see you, all the way up to the like your main events and stuff like that, you damn well better be able to do that stuff. And they are. So I think it's the perfect training ground for the skill set that's going to get you to stand up or acting in movies or action movies or whatever. I mean, I can't think of a better way to be thrown into the fire in front of an audience and have to handle it.
Well, I was thinking like your name on a marquee locally, regardless of the hours of the day that it was, like you could really like if you wanted to do a stand-up show on like a random Saturday or Sunday, like in the afternoon or something, it would probably get an audience.
Well, it's not entirely out of the realm of
spot away from somebody else's.
Yeah. It's like for a charity or stuff like that. And we'll go host a lot of times. Like I think of, so I'm the co-host of the show, you think of like Artie Lang or Jackie the Joke Man in the Stern camp, and then other people who do it, and I've seen it. You see it take its wear and tear, especially with the hours. But you're saying like a one-off? No, that wouldn't be that bad. But again, we end up doing a lot of charity work too, so the weekends are consumed with a lot of events. And then also you want to live your life, and do that. Yeah. But I'm glad that some people find me funny and enjoy the stuff that I do on the show. And, to me, it's about keeping that as good to go with me being as much in the right frame of mind as necessary to do the show and put out the content and to keep that what it needs to be, because we've been on for quite a long time and we're signed, to 2030. And, and if the offer comes in again to extend, even though, as you said, we're all getting older and Lord knows I am, my goal is to, I'll run it into the grave. I mean, if people enjoy it, and I certainly enjoy doing it, I'm getting my comedy, buzz that way, and in a way that I never thought I could, which is one thing about stand-up that was always a little daunting for me was the same material, refining the same material. Now it turns out you get on, if you get on the radio show, the way I am with the Preston and Steve show, people end up liking bits that they like you to repeat or to do characters that they like you to repeat. And somehow, whereas in stand-up that seemed to be annoying, it's not annoying. Because the audience, they're the customer. What they want you to do, you do, and you try to do it the best you can. And if it makes someone smile and if it makes someone happy, then do it. When I was doing stand-up, and there are a lot of comedians that'll do this, that there are some who just hone down their act so precisely, like Dennis Miller. I love Dennis Miller's Off-White album, I think it was. You would see him perform that material, and wherever you saw him perform it, it was like absolutely almost exactly the same. That's a lot of work to polish everything and to get that done.
Word for word, beat for beat. Yeah, exactly.
And so for me, I would get bored with the material and want to do something else. That's why improvisation, I was in an improvisational comedy troupe for years as well, you know. And that's where I had the real, that's to me where it really came through, because the only difference between, you know, a stand-up comedian and many are improvisational comedians as well, an improv comic is just saying it as he's writing it, you know, or her or she's writing it. That's it. You're just saying it. You haven't litmus tested it. And so where the stand-up comedian who's up on stage, who's not riffing, is going to be subject to the audience, you know, judging material that they've worked on and honed, and they're going to be a little bit more critical because they know that the improvisational comedy audience knows that you're improvising. And so you get a little latitude where you might not get it otherwise, because it's like, oh, well, okay, that maybe that one came up short, but they're just thinking of it right now. By the way, the big secret is in improvisational comedy, when you throw out situations to the audience, they usually throw back a lot of the same stuff. So
it's stuff that you kind of have practice at.
You kind of have practice at a lot of times. So, but yeah, that's, I mean, what do you get when you're on the stage? Contrasted to being a wrestler, you know, obviously besides the physicality, are you getting the same feeling from the audience when you're doing stand-up?
So you, like an audience pop, is it a laugh? I think the main things I wanted to be when I was a kid, first, I wanted to be a stand-up comedian. That's right. The first thing I ever wanted to be. And then I found wrestling. And then I found wrestling and I was like, well, that's a thing. I'm going to pursue it. So then I went, okay. And only pursue that and not stand-up comedy. So I decided to, like, quote unquote, master wrestling. I wanted to be a wrestler. And then after I was in that, I was like, oh, well, I could do stand up too. I'm gonna be less limited in what things I want to be and do. You know, I constantly say, like, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a wrestler and I wanted to be a stand up comedian, but I didn't know I wanted to be a podcaster because those didn't exist yet. Right. So maybe whatever it is, if you're struggling with not having a purpose in any way, Maybe the thing that you're supposed to be doesn't exist yet. Maybe the thing that you want the most doesn't exist in the world yet.
I say this all the time to the interns, you know, listen. Okay. So here we go. My older brother, Gene, went to college, wanted to become a teacher and, you know, wanted to become an English teacher. He goes, he's teaching at a high school, teaching English. He's not a good experience. And he's like, I'm not getting a good response. I thought it'd be something different. He gets convinced to enroll in the army with the promise that he'll, you know, obviously get an accelerated treatment, which is a line that a lot of times they'll feed you, but they actually did it with him. And they trained him for, to install audio and surveillance systems, things of that nature. Well, he gets called to install the audio system in the White House. While he's at the White House, the Secret Service takes note of him, and they ask him if he wants to, you know, become part of the Secret Service. So from English teacher teaching, you know, catcher in the rye, he ends up in the Secret Service. So, and so I tell our interns, you know, if you could jump just 5 years into the future and look at where you are compared to where you were, it would blow your mind. You won't believe it. So, like, as you say, where they may have been saying, well, that, you know, the real big jobs, the jobs that are the real heavy hitters. Now, you know, we're blessed to be in an upper tier show with a high level of visibility in the industry. You know, but there are fewer and farther between now because of consolidation and things of that nature. But, well, here you go. Here comes podcasting, which is essentially, you know, delayed or on-demand radio. And so the same technology, or at least variations of that technology, the same mechanics that go into making a great radio show will help to make a great podcast. All of that is applicable. I remember when the Amazon Echo, you know, came out for the first time, or smart speakers, as they were calling them, you know, and still do occasionally. But this is going to kill. We've heard it a thousand times. It's going to kill terrestrial radio. Terrestrial radio is still the mofo. And what happened was is that people started listening to us on. We used to say, okay, what percentage is listening to us on, you know, their in-dash apps, or you know, on their Echoes or Apple HomePods or whatever they all call them. And it was very small. Now it's pretty substantial. And I mean, you know, now that's the thing. It's if you're creative and you think about the same way you can, like you did, you repurposed your desire to be a comedian. Okay. This may not be quite working, but what if I come in through this way, which you did with the wrestling, you just pivoted and that's it. You're right. If you love it, pursue it. And if it doesn't seem like it's presenting to you right now, give it a little while, because you said, here comes the technology, here comes podcasting, here comes whatever else is going to be next. It's there. And if you have the same love and drive to do it and carry that through, then, you know, the odds are in your favor, because if you love what you do, you're going to inherently perform the job or be better at it. And then, more often than not, you'll succeed at a level that would be acceptable to you. Does that make any sense, or am I just vomiting out to you?
The analogy I make of it is, you know, you get as many at-bats as you take, and you can get all the way to home base off a bunt. It doesn't matter how fast you get there.
Right. So for you, for example, right now, with your career, with stand-up, with and getting a little bit back into the wrestling, I assume, do you have a plan laid out? Are you the kind of guy that makes plans? You have a decade in advance plan, or are you will take it as it comes guy?
I'm a little of both. I'm not somebody who likes to have a big, extensive plan. I do want some goals and definitely some growth for sure in what I'm doing, but I'm not going to sit there and plan every single thing out, because it feels less organic. It feels less like, if I have something that I really want to say, if I've already planned that I'm going to say all this, then I'm going to skip the things that I wanted to say.
Right.
You know, like, when I started doing this podcast, what we had already had with my friends, we had already had a pro wrestling talk show that we were doing, like just wrestle talk.
Right.
And for 1 hour every Friday, we were doing 1 hour of wrestle talk. And I was like, I want to talk about so much more. I want to be so much more. I like want the audience to be able to understand who I am a little bit more, other than just somebody who's in the wrestling business and has opinions about it. So I decided to start doing this to pull the limits off of me. So I think plans can be limited.
Yeah.
Can be limiting. But also goals are important to achieve anything.
All right. Listen, You accept or at least entertain the notion in life that you might discover a hybrid version of what you thought you wanted to do or where you thought you wanted to be that will reveal itself to be far more enjoyable, far more challenging, far more exciting than you had thought before. I love the John Lennon quote, and I use it all the time, which is, life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans. And that's it. So again, another hackneyed phrase, be fluid, you know, be fluid in life. Be ready to say, you know what, let me take a crack at this. I think one of the worst things you can do, and this, I'm going to be hypocritical after I say this, but it's the truth. To someone in elementary school or junior high, so what do you want to be for the next 60 years? You know, you place that cloud over a kid who's, you know, then craps himself and, you know, in terror at the notion of what I have to commit to. You don't have to commit to anything. I knew from an early age that comedy was something that I wanted to do either comedy television movies, I loved movies, loved stand-up, loved comedy skits, all of that stuff. I was doing it early, and I would write for the class clown, you know, at in school.
But notes.
Right, you know what I'm saying? Like I remember the I got one of the
stands up. Sorry, I got the light.
Yeah. Well, when the kid got I got a kid thrown out of second grade. I remember and I was trying to help him with his material. And we were talking about the Suez Canal, and so the teacher asked, well, who are the people who live, you know, around the Suez Canal? And so I lean over and I go, the Suezians. And so he blurts it out because he thinks that's the legit answer. And the teacher got mad at him. And I'd like to say that I interceded and said, no, it was me that gave that line, but I was a chicken shit. The ability to make people laugh, because the audience, the kids did laugh at that. From there on, I knew that's what I wanted to do. Radio again was on the fringe. Wasn't really. I love radio. I've always loved radio as an audience member. Always adored it. But the notion of making it and being a show, being a morning show, waking up at the time I would routinely be getting home from stand up. Seemed almost impossible, but here I am. And people say, how do you do it? I do it. You know, it's what you do, and you can do it in anything, especially if you love it. Obviously, if your goal is to, you know, I want to master the art of invisibility, or, you know, I mean, I don't even want to put limits on that. You know, who knows if you're a scientist or whatever, but ultimately go for it. Because even if the path doesn't get you directly to where you're going, you're going to meet someone who's going to mention something. Hey, have you thought about this? Or try this? Or what about that? Oh, so, you know, it's the way my mind works is, okay, so here's one area and here's the other area. And life does that to you, you know? So it's very rare, they're the golden children who they want something and they get it, you know, in a streamlined fashion. But sometimes that work and that effort, and all of that stuff, the journey is actually what you're going to enjoy the most, what'll mean the most to you. So I should be working for the Hallmark Channel. I really should.
Celebrations are greater when there's already been multiple failed attempts.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, wrestling, you know, the physicality, the damage on your body, but executing a move the way you wanted to, hearing the audience respond in the way you wanted to, that had to be your, your drug, so to speak, that worked for you, right? I mean, and this stand-up gives the same thing to you, correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, the part where you said people go, oh, how do you do it? The thing is, you don't even know how you're going to do it until you actually do it with anything. You kind of the best teacher is experience. So
yeah.
getting some dirt in your nails and understanding that, like, there's more than one way up the mountain. So whatever those things you're going for, you're more likely going to get towards those goals, and those goals are more likely going to find you if you're heading towards them.
Well, and you can think about things in a different way. Like we have great interns that help us put on the show, and they'll come in and say they'll be focused on video production, or they'll be focused on marketing or promotions, or they'll be focused on whatever. And they get in there and they're seeing, you know, the way the show works and Marissa producing, and they're looking at her doing the, you know, executive producing and running stuff on the other side of the screen. And then they're seeing Kyle, our video guy, doing the video of the show. And then they're seeing Connor, who's doing, handling all sorts of stuff from screening calls to, putting, you know, prep sheets together. They're seeing celebrities come in and out. They're seeing the mechanism of the show run. They're seeing us on mic, you know, performing and doing the show. And suddenly there's this whole world of, like, oh my God. Or they're saying, oh, scheduling the commercials or this, or how who makes the commercials, how are they made, you know, the recording, the engineering, all of that stuff is now on the menu. That's why also in life, when you're given the ability to intern and or just volunteer and or just hang around. And if you love something, you know, that's kind of what happened with me as far as getting into radio again. I was, they asked me to go promote, do a sort of a live comedy segment with a local radio station. This was on Long Island. The station was WBAB. There was a club there that I was going to be appearing at. And so I went over and did the, you know, did the thing, went into the station. Well, what do you know? The guy who's the, is going to record everything. I went to college with him. He's the production director. And he says, hey, can you help me with some comedy bits for the morning show? And I'm like, yeah, okay. I mean, I was living on Long Island at the time. I was just, you know, close to the station. Yeah, I'll go do that. And then, you know, they gave me some trade for a, you know, like an electronics place. And I was like, sure, why not? I'm having fun doing that. And then that starts to get attention. And then they offer me a full-time job. I'm like, well, I could still do stand up and still do this at the same time. And then the full-time job comes through and I'm realizing, wow, I'm really loving comedy and loving radio. So this thing that I thought would not be part of the direction became the main direction. But that was only because, as you said, try it, do it, give it a shot.
The fulfillment that you get from radio is what the fulfillment, that's what the FM is.
Yeah,
FM
yeah.
Fulfillment radio.
Yeah, it is, honestly. I mean, we have, look at Pierre Robert. Pierre Robert is one of the legendary DJs in the country and of all time. I'll say it. He deserves his legend, and he helped us, and he is radio. He loves radio. He loves speaking to people. Everyone listening is a friend of Pierre's, and he wants you to know that that means the world. You know, he does extended shows on the holidays. He wants to be part of your tradition. Pierre never, you say hi to Pierre out and about, you never get the perfunctory handshake and a nod. He wants to talk to you because he loves radio. He loves the people who support it. He loves, you know, the greater familial sense. That's what we all love. And so, you know, these are things that are available to you in your own life. If you find the thing that motivates you and are not afraid to head towards it. I mean, you don't get ridiculous if your wife is expecting triplets and, you know, it may not be the time to leave your high paying office job to be a street mime, but, you know, again, when the kids are born and you have a little in the bank and it really means a lot to you, then, you know, perhaps give it a shot incrementally.
Maybe just practice being a street mime in the mirror for a while.
If that makes you feel good. And then what you might realize is that you might be looking at the mirror and say, how the fuck do they make these things? And then you get fascinated with the mirror. And before you know, you're doing research. And then you go to that mirror show that's at the convention center. And you meet as insipid and stupid as it sounds, that's how stuff happens. You know, it's just weird. But I mean,
trail.
Yeah. Keep your mind open to it. It's the multiverse in real time.
So, what's a question? I mean, I know you've done tons of broadcasts. You've done tons of probably interviews on podcasts and whatever else. What's one thing that you've never been asked that you've always wanted to be asked?
Why did you assassinate President Lincoln? Never been asked that because I didn't, but I did want to be asked it at least once.
Okay.
Would you do me the honor?
So let me ask you this real deep question.
Sure. Yeah.
Why did you assassinate Abraham Lincoln?
Thanks for the opportunity, Corey. I was set up. It was not me at all. It was a subpar actor named John Wilkes Booth. And I suggest you investigate that.
You know, do you think that's where you think booing and heckling came from? They were like, Booth.
Yeah. If you're going to lose the audience, it's going to be through assassination. I think no audience responds favorably to assassination. Unless it's the guy standing up in front of you at a concert using a full iPad to take a picture. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
and that, yeah. It's like they have things called iPhones, which are smaller versions of that.
I went to an Incubus concert in Atlantic City a couple weeks ago, and I went right down in the front, and I brought my friend with me, and he's a little bit shorter than I am.
Yeah.
And I was like, we're right at the front, but there's like a good amount of people in front of us. And I was like, this place is great. There's not too many two talls around here. You know, like at concerts when there's too many two talls around.
Yep. It sucks. Yeah.
It was perfect.
I mean, we were
right standing in the perfect spot where there's not enough two talls to be right in the way.
What if during the Lincoln Douglas debates, and I keep referring to Lincoln, what if you get a great seat and a guy comes up with his Civil War box camera in front of you and blocks your view? You'd be pissed. So it's the same thing holds true today. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, you know, he's probably not going to be there for very long. The bulb explodes and then he leaves.
Well, yeah. And it takes 10 minutes to take a still photograph. But no, that said, you know, so all of that stuff, you're an example of going after something that you want, taking the risks. It's all about risk and reward, but you get the big gets when you take the big risks, you know? So,
indeed.
And I hope I haven't been, blathering on like an idiot, but listen, you want to hope that you can impart something useful to somebody and make their lives a little bit better. That's what you do. So, it's what we want to do.
Can I challenge you, Steve?
Sure.
Referring to yourself as like an idiot or any other thing like that, if we could challenge ourselves to catch ourselves doing that for the next 30 days,
yeah.
And if you do it, just go like, oh, I gotta have some more grace with myself because you make a living talking and blathering, and none of that is like an idiot. It's always smart and it's always funny.
Thank you.
Give
yourself
that attaboy if you can.
No, I appreciate that. And we do get a lot of accolades and stuff. It's great. One of the things I've always loved as a quality of people is self-deprecation to a level. So I always respond well to someone who can take the air out of their own balloon, so to speak, and doesn't take themselves too seriously. So, but you're right. I chastise my wife when she saw that wasn't anything. It's like, no, it is. So you're right. I will take that challenge, Corey.
Good. I think it comes across as humbling. And it comes across as humble to be self-deprecating. And I fully get it because it can disarm somebody's already like prejudgments they have maybe brought up in their mind. So if somebody goes, oh, I already have an idea of what this guy is. I've already seen him. I've seen a million guys that are just like that who talk the same exact way. It's like, yeah, but then once I make fun of a thing that I know you're probably already thinking, it disarms you from that judgment and it makes you like breathe a little bit easier.
You raise a good point, but sadly reminded me that his history teaches us that John Wilkes Booth was very self-deprecating. And we'll call him the outlier in this case.
He's always like, oh, I blew my line like a freaking idiot. I'm so dumb.
Fuck. I'm so horrible. I just want to go shoot a president. But there we go. But anyway, so he will not follow his advice, and we'll remember that what he did was wrong, and we'll remember that even though self-deprecation can be good, that you can't let it get carried away so that you're just beating up on yourself, because other people will see that and think, well, maybe I should do likewise. Because it's funny, we went to see Schindler's List years ago. Not that Schindler's List is funny, but I remember my wife, I saw it four times in 1 week. It's a masterpiece. It's just, it's just an amazing movie. So coming out of that, and my wife was crying and, it's obviously moving. And her takeaway was that, she didn't know whether she could be that, do that, be that bold, be that, to put that list together to do, as there were some liberties taken with the movie, but what Oscar Schindler did. And I said, you look at him, he was a war profiteer. He was not a faultless person. He had all sorts of foibles and stuff that sucked about him. But even that person can do the right thing, you know? And that's really the message. It's the way we process it, though, you know?
A broken clock is right twice a day, unless right. it's broken all the way and on the ground.
Right, yeah, yeah, that's true. It's a good point. But still, even at that point, the directions that the arrows are pointing suggest a particular time on the clock. So I'll challenge you to consider the plight of the smashed clock and its ability to be accurate.
Well, also, I mean, digital clocks break, and they're never right if they're broken.
There you go. All right, I concede back to you. Yeah, you with that point, so.
And I was never good at telling time. That's why I don't wear a watch. Never good at telling time. I always be like 5, 10, 15, 20. Like I could never like.
So you're not an analog. So we were, I went to my early schooling was in North Korea. No, my early schooling was, that was one of the things they beat over your head was using an analog clock. They didn't call it an analog clock at the time, but, yeah, so that I can just look. In fact, I used to have a watch. It was the cool thing that had no numbers on it. I could, okay, there we go. It's 3:33, you know, it was cool. But I mean, now, honestly, if you don't want to use an analog clock, we have a digital readout, you know, everywhere, and it's part of the deal. But I kind of like being able to tell time on an analog clock.
I mean, I can tell time, but it just takes me I should factor in how long it'll take me to find out what time it actually is.
Right. And then it compensate. Like, yeah.
It was 3:30, but it might be 3:35 now.
Right. Right. You know, they used to have binary clocks, which were just dots on a display. And I learned how to read to tell time with that. But I mean, is that an impressive thing these days? Do people go there? Have you heard about Lou? Oh, he can tell time like crazy. You know, and it's not as impressive as Lou, do your party trick where you tell people what time it is. It's never, Christ, I don't want to do that. Oh, yeah, the old time. All right, it's 4:11. he's right. You know, in the things that are less impressive these days, you know. You're thinking about that, right? You want to be that guy at the party telling time now. There's your new act. The incredible timeini.
Would you look at the sun? It's time to get out of here.
Yeah. Audience members, let's shout out. What time is it? And it's amazing. Now we've never met before, right? And we did not discuss the time before you came up on stage.
Right. Like the guy who guesses your weight.
Right, yeah.
At the fair.
Right.
He's now, why don't you come up and you tell me what time you think it is?
So somewhere there's a mother who has two kids, and the one she's most proud of is the weight guesser. And she encourages, but is less proud of the time guesser. So there you go.
There's a sketch right there.
But anyway, so I hope it gave you what you were looking for.
Just a couple more things, and then I'll send you off into the sunset with a hot dog and a handshake. So I have just a few things where you and I have interacted in person before, and I've been out to some of your guys' events.
Yes, and we appreciate that.
I went and saw Team America with you guys at the
Which
truck.
Is a masterpiece.
And I saw
we ran the unedited version.
And I went and saw Teen Witch. So this is so far back.
Oh, the truck! We love those. We're trying to bring them back. We're going to do one at the Camp Out for Hunger because it's so friggin' awesome.
Yeah, I mean, and also, the part of what you're doing and it being fulfilling, I want to say, like, for me, it would get me through a big chunk of my workday for a good amount of years. And I wanted to say on the record how much I appreciated that. And I thought that that's respectable. That's really cool that, that you give somebody some relief from whatever else they might, they didn't want to wake up and go into work and blah, blah, blah. And you just got the relieving that I always felt that it was probably really rewarding on your end.
Well, I can say this, and we say this all the time, and Preston and Casey and Kathy and Nick and Marissa and Connor and everybody will say it is a joy. It is an honor. Every morning we are humbled by anyone who turns the show on and listens and spends time with us. Always unrelentingly kind and supportive. The charity events that we do that are supported, the actual events where we get to hang at like Teen Witch and things like that, it is not lost on us at all. It means everything. I've said the people of this area have given me, have given my wife, have given us our livelihood and everything. We will never forget it. And it means the world. So yes, you talk about the fulfillment being FM. You know, we are blessed to have above everything else a whole huge chunk of people that we consider dear friends. We may not have met in person, but you are considered a friend, and that's you know, I'm talking in general. Obviously, we have, but and so yes, to your point. I just expanded on a little bit, but it means the world.
A lot of this stuff is for me. When I'm doing these shows, a lot of it is just cool to have like a cool little timestamp. Now, when I go, like, you guys have been on the air. I listened back in the Y100 days. So you guys have been on the air in this area since.
So as the version of the show that we are since 97.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, pretty much that. Well, with some changes of people in and out, but we went to WMMR in 2005, which was, you know, just a tectonic shift, a massive shift, and it was amazing. But we were pretty much the same show at Y100, and you know, we loved that part of our existence as well. And then before that, DRE.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
104.5, is that what that was?
Yes. Yeah. 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 And up in New York, it was 92.3 or 90? Yeah. So, it's weird that I don't remember that, but I do remember it was WLIR, we got WDRE, which ended up, DRE in Philadelphia. And then when DRE in Philadelphia went down, most of the people went to Y100. I had worked with Preston on DRE, you know, remotely. And then they all ended up at Y100. And then I joined Preston Maryland and became Preston Maryland Steve. Cut to 2005. Maryland left the show a number of years before that. It was Preston and Steve, and over to MMR. And the rest is history all the way. Everything goes according to Hoyle all the way to 2030 and beyond.
Well, I mean, so for me, I've been doing this show since 2017. Right. So when I go back and I listen to it, the version of me that's on that show, that younger version of me. So if I, like, let's say I go back and like listen to an episode from like 2018 or something, yeah, like this is a timestamp on what was maybe going on in my life and who I was and what ways I could relate this thing or that thing to another. Like, it's called Evolving with Corey Castle, not just because that's my name and I want it on the show, but it's like you're evolving with me. Just,
right.
I'm going to change while this world changes. And
well, to be honest, it was like you reached out and your message was nice. I knew, but you know, of you, obviously we, you know, you've been a supporter of the show for a long time and it was just a genuine, you know, thing. And the notion of evolving and so on and so forth was so straight ahead and cool. And I thought, yeah, so that, you know, you're doing some good stuff, you know, and the whole idea of trying to evolve as a person, that's a good message to get out there.
Well, I mean, I'm also popping through on like ever going back now, like you're on the record going back all those years.
Yep.
You can see your growth, your evolution from right, who you were then to who you are now. Now also like that on the record, that stuff of you surviving the prostate stuff.
Cancer, yeah.
On all the like
all there
world events that have happened while you're on the radio and you can have some bit of commentary on it and you're helping people kind of like make sense of it from your perspective.
We were doing actually a live remote from outside of Ford's Theater. American Cousin was the show, and it was a John Wilkes Booth. And then from there on, you know, it was incredible. We were off running. No, but you're right. So much of history has been chronicled through the show. And to look at us back then and look at us now, one truth of the matter is that, I mean, my sense of humor is still pretty much the same. I mean, it is changed in certain ways. Like I said, repeating things that people like, I'm thrilled to do it if they want that. And if it makes someone happy and they want to hear something or they want to hear a bit done again, sure. Because I get to juxtapose it with doing all new stuff every day. So, but I mean, the essential stuff that I still find humorous, the sick stuff that I still find humorous, the stuff that I say that pushes us up to the line. I love it, you know, and I mean, it's much to the chagrin sometimes of my wife or whatever. I it's what I do. It's who I am. So,
I'm obsessed with things being on the record. I had some close friends on the podcast who, going back and listening to those episodes after they've passed away, has really been helpful. And the fact being able to tell somebody how I really feel and it being captured in a time capsule is really important. So I want to say right now, for on the record stuff, I want to make sure I tell you how glad I am that you and I are connected now. And I want to make sure to let you know I'm happy to be a resource for you in any way and let you know that if you ever feel like you need a friend or anything like that, don't ever hesitate to call me or reach out to me. I'm right here.
That's very nice.
For anybody also listening, not to take away from the gesture that I just made to you.
No.
Anybody at all ever feels like you're like alone and you've got no friends, you got like nobody to hear you in a judgment-free manner, my DMs are wide open all the time. I'm absolutely happy to take the time to talk to you. I'm a real guy. I'm gonna converse with you and try to make you feel heard and understood. And if I can't hear you and understand you, shrugs you beat.
Yeah, you know what? That's a wonderful thing to avail yourself to people like that. And I know your heart's in the right place. It seems to be. Obviously, we haven't, we haven't donated organs to each other, but we've encountered each other. And I knew you enough to say that this concept of evolving and doing this is great. And to do that for you, the people who support your show and your various careers is wonderful. And it'll make you feel wonderful, as I know you know. So I don't know if this is the end or are we wrapping up or whatever. You tell me. I think we're good, right?
Just real quick, sure. Couple quick things. I wanted to give you the chance if you wanted to ask me anything or say anything while we're on the record. I know. Well,
One other
quick thing I wanted to thank you for was your support of our Batman short film that we did.
Yes, a while ago. Yeah,
yeah.
Cool. Any plans for another one?
No plans.
No.
But
I mean, you know, James Gunn's looking for a new Batman. I don't know. Throw it out there. You could be right.
I'd be happy to do it. Yeah.
Batman give him with a beard. Call. Yeah. The Batman stuff is, I'm in the, I got the Marvel stuff behind me. So I got the Hulk blaster. I've got John Wick over there. I've got Deadpool back there. I've got the flying sub from an old show called Voyage to Bottom of the Sea. And I've got, there's Thing behind me from the Addams Family and Wednesday. So, yeah, you know, an adult who plays with toys, that's me.
My toys are all right here. They're not behind me, so nobody can really see them. But I got some Ricks. I got a
Rick
few
and Morty, Ricks very nice. Yeah.
I got a Kermopolis Michael from Rick and Morty.
So no. Big Rick and Morty fan. There's the new show from the Rick and Morty people that is debuting on the Animation Nation or whatever they call it on Fox Sunday nights. It's coming up. It's supposed to take place during like the Roman Empire. Rick and Morty folks. See,
no,
I just gave you a little piece of information.
Well, thank you for that.
Go forth and spread that.
So, the way we normally wrap it up is what I'll do is I'm gonna hypothetically tell you that I've gifted you this show. This is the first episode of your new show.
Okay.
Having with Steve Morrison. This is the very first episode.
All right.
Pilot episode, and treat it like a Jerry Springer's final thought, where you wrap up in a nice, pretty bow the best takeaways to help somebody be inspired to be a better version of themselves.
You want me to deliver a final message a la Jerry Springer?
A la.
All right. I will do that then. So today we witnessed how love can go wrong. LaWanda loved Deshaun so much that she cracked a lawn chair over his head. And I think there is hope for them at the end of the tunnel if they just be nice to each other and realize that they have kids that they need to provide for. And it's all about love. It was about love when I paid for a prostitute while mayor of Cincinnati. And it's about love right now. And so I wish you all the love in the world and go forward and be good people. Was that good?
Yeah, okay. That's great. Just like Jerry Springer. You nailed it. What's your favorite impression to do?
My impressions are all pretty moderately okay, but I love dialects. I love the Preston loves Stallone, and Stallone always, people love the Stallone stuff, and I really amp it up. An old actor named James Mason, people love. Caitlyn Jenner, people seem to really enjoy. Bono, who else? God, for a long time it was Michael Jackson, you know, but I do quirky, dumb. So you take somebody who's really good, like a Kyle, God, is it Kyle? No, Craig Gass? Yeah. And I can't believe I'm having a brain fart now, but then the other great impressionists who are out there who just do great jobs at mimicking, I try, so I can get a percentage in that's pretty good. And then I try to give them good material to say. And so that's how I compensate for substandard impression, but trying to make you laugh at least with the material. And in some cases I fail on both counts, but it's okay.
Like Mitch Hedberg. He's like, can't please all the people all the time. And last night, all those people were at my show.
right. Exactly.
Well, normally what I do is I'll have the guest say the way we close it out. I'll always say, be fun, have safe, keep evolving. But I'll have the guests first say it as their favorite impression.
All right. Well, all right. I'll do James Mason. And what is the phrase, the delightful little phrase that you said?
Be fun, have safe, keep evolving.
Is that be fun, have safe, and keep evolving? That's a word salad I don't understand, but God bless you.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, man.
Thanks,
I
everybody,
appreciate it.
For tuning in. If this is the first time checking out the show, make sure you hit that like, subscribe, and follow me on Instagram. And don't ever be afraid to comment or reach out to me in the DMs. Be fun, have safe, keep evolving. Show's over.
Bye-bye.
Bye.